Vaishnavis. Anyesham of others, punyashlokanam of pious reputation, udama yasasam, whose fame is spread everywhere, satam of the devotees, upashrutya by hearing, bhavet may arise, modaha pleasure. Srivatsa Ankasya, of the Lord who bears the mark of Srivatsa. Kimpunaha, what to speak of. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. What to speak of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, whose chest is marked with Srivatsa. People may take transcendental pleasure even in hearing of the works and deeds of the devotees, whose fame is immortal. Purport. Bhagavatam literally means the pastimes of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. For example, there are pastimes of Lord Krishna and narrations of devotees like Prahlad, Dhruva, and Maharaj Ambarish. Both pastimes pertain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because the devotees' pastimes are in relation with Him. The Mahabharata, for example, the history of the Pandavas and their activities is sacred because the Pandavas had a direct relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Aginata Medanda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Namilitamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitamena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam. So here in the translation, it's making the point that hearing the pastimes of the devotees, the pure devotees of Krishna, is as good as hearing the pastimes of Krishna. And Prabhupada gave some examples there in the purport, Prahlad, Dhruva, Maharaj Ambarish. And of course, he mentioned himself, but Prabhupada's, would be another example of a devotee we could hear about. And it's just as good as hearing about Krishna. And, Prabhupada's such an important part of all our lives. And there's so much that we can relish, about the pastimes of Prabhupada. I mentioned this before in previous classes, so I'll just mention it, but I won't belabor the point that it's very easy to meditate on the pastimes of Prabhupada. Something I do continually is I go on to the Vanipedia or Vani source, and I listen to Prabhupada's lectures, and I do it, consecutively, chronologically. I start right at the beginning, and I just work my way through. And it's not only you getting the benefit of hearing what Prabhupada has to say, but you get absorbed in what was going on, because Prabhupada said this, he was in this place, and it was this year, and this is what was going on in the movement, and this is what was going on in the world, and this is what I was, if you're a Prabhupada disciple, this is what I was doing while that was all going on. And it really, you really get absorbed in it. It's more than you just get the benefit of hearing the instruction. You get absorbed in the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada by doing that. And of course, that's not the only way. We have all these wonderful memories from the different Prabhupada's disciples, and books that are being written by some prominent disciples. So all those things are good, and are, according to this translation and purport, it's as good as hearing about the pastimes of Krishna. And for some of us, it's kind of more easily to relate to and more accessible. So that's that point. Another point is it's also very important to hear about the glories of contemporary devotees. You know, that's also very important. Sometimes there's a tendency, the Kanishtha Adhikaris, one of the characteristics of a Kanishtha Adhikari is that he worships the Lord in the temple, but he's not able to make friends with the devotees. He's not able to, you know, he's just the Lord in the temple, that's it. Doesn't make friends with the devotees, doesn't preach to the innocent, you know, he doesn't have that discriminatory power at that point. So we're supposed to go beyond that, see? That platform, we're supposed to, you know, advance beyond that. An extension of that is this Kanishtha mentality is that we only recognize Prabhupada. Prabhupada's the only devotee, you know, now. That the contemporary devotees don't mean anything. It's just Prabhupada. But that's actually taking something away from Prabhupada. You know, if you're thinking that it's just Prabhupada that was glorious and, you know, wonderful, but not the contemporary, not any of his disciples, that's, you're basically what you're doing is saying that Prabhupada, if he didn't have the power, he didn't have the potency to, help any of his disciples advance and become elevated in devotional service. It's actually kind of like an insult to Prabhupada indirectly. So we should also try to cultivate that mentality of, hearing about being interested to hear about the nice service that other devotees do. And this is it's actually a very important point. I think the last class I gave, I read an excerpt from a letter from Prabhupada, very brief one, and which I will read again. And then I'm going to read something, another letter that Prabhupada wrote, which really kind of elaborates on this point. So, in a letter that Prabhupada wrote to a devotee named Madhavananda, in 1974, Prabhupada said, "In material life, there is simply envy of others' progress." And envy of others' progress. "But in spiritual life, one encourages another. Oh, you are doing very nice. That is Radharani." Prabhupada said, "That's Radharani's mood." She says, "Oh, here is a very nice devotee. Please, Krishna, you accept him." So we always have to remember that the default position in material life is this, as Prabhupada describes it here, progress in envy of others. So we have to cultivate, not being envious of others. And there's a way to do that. And I'm going to touch upon that in a second. But just to give an analogy, and just imagine those of us who have gone to Mayapur, when you jump in the Ganges River, the Ganges always has a current. It's always, it's not like a lake, When you jump on a river, usually a big river, it's flowing one way. So what happens when you jump in the Ganges, if you don't make a decision, I'm swimming upstream, guess which way you're going? You're going downstream, you see? So it's like that. If we don't make a decision, I am going to, glorify the devotees. I'm going to appreciate the service of the other devotees. I'm going to, like that, then automatically, the material mentality kicks in, the default position, and you're going to be engaged in envy of others' progress. You see, so we have to, have a positive program. And in this next letter, I'm going to read an excerpt where Prabhupada actually, you'll hear Prabhupada say that much more eloquently and nicely. So this is a letter Prabhupada wrote to Brahmananda in 1969, and he said, to Brahmananda, I said that right. "It's very nice to learn that both you and Satsvarup have highly praised Tamal Krishna. Similarly, Tamal Krishna has also highly praised you and Satsvarup. This attitude should be maintained amongst your God brothers." That means till today. "That will elevate us more and more to the top of devotional service. This is called Vaikuntha attitude. In the Vaikuntha, factually, there is no fault in anyone, but there is another type of competition. This competition is that one devotee thinks of other devotees how nicely they are serving the Lord. In the material world, the attitude is that everyone likes to think that I am doing better than others. This is material conception. In the spiritual sky, it is just the opposite. Everyone thinks that my contemporary devotees are doing better than me. We are trained to address God brothers as Prabhu, which means master. This means we shall try to find out always the serving side of our God brothers. Sometimes there are misgivings, but that we should try to overlook. See, so Prabhupada's saying we should try to always find out the serving side. In other words, see the service. Don't focus in on the discrepancies, the idiosyncrasies or the whatever. It's the things like material. No, try to, consciously make an effort to appreciate the service. That's what I think Prabhupada's saying there, that's what he means by saying seeing the serving side of the God brothers. Consciously try to appreciate the service, the service mood, the service attitude, the actual service that other devotees are rendering, and focus on that. Prabhupada sometimes would give the example of the fly and the honeybee. The flies, they focus on the nasty, where there's some infection, some pus, some stool like that, and they're all over it, right? That's like the materialistic mentality. And the honeybees, they're always trying to figure out, well, where's the honey? And they'll go from one flower to another, and like that. So we have to have, Prabhupada would say, we have to have that, the mentality of the bee, always looking, where's the honey? Not the fly. Where's the pus? Where's the decomposed matter? No. So that's the point that Prabhupada's making there. And there's multiple benefits to our doing that. One is, it's our own purification. We get purified by doing that. Another is it creates a Vaikuntha atmosphere. When devotees commit to that sort of a cultivation, it creates a Vaikuntha atmosphere. It's very, palpable. You can experience it. I'll say something more about that as we go on. Another point is it actually encourages other devotees. Devotees are encouraged by that when, they're trying hard to do something and other devotees appreciate their service. And you could say, I thought we're supposed to be just do it as a duty and not be, attached to the result, not be concerned. Yeah, that's true. But Prabhupada did say, and this is a paraphrase, there was an occasion where Prabhupada said something to the effect, I can't remember, didn't have time to research and find the exact quote, but Prabhupada was, it was a time when the devotees weren't distributing Prabhupada's books. They were way behind, and Prabhupada was translating, but the books weren't going out so much. And Prabhupada said, this is once again a paraphrase. He said, if you don't distribute the books, I don't feel encouraged to write. He made that point that even I need encouragement. So if my disciples aren't distributing my books, I don't feel. So it's not mundane. In other words, Prabhupada himself, pure devotee, was expressing that he appreciated encouragement in his service. So it's bona fide. So it's like we have to practice it. We have to practice it. I just realized this morning how I missed out a great opportunity just yesterday. We were at this conference in San Antonio, Texas, and they were giving out some complimentary carry bags to all the attendees, so there was a lot, and they were nice bags, They were very practical. Well made, a lot of little different pockets and zippers and stuff like that. And so I got one for myself, and I got one for my wife, but there was a whole bunch, left on the counter, a couple hundred. And, they were just there. And I didn't even bother to think, I should go up and ask them. I should tell them I'm a professor. I've got a few dozen students who would really, can you spare them? I could have given him as gifts to all the devotees in San Antonio. See, if I was thinking right, if I was in this Vaikuntha mentality, I would have been thinking, here's an opportunity to give some nice gift to all the devotees, But I wasn't, so I missed out on an opportunity, I was in the impersonal consciousness of just thinking, look at these mudhas fools, they made all this extra stuff. Nobody wants it. But anyway, just in general, the whole, the impersonal consciousness, it doesn't work. I mean, it's tempting because sometimes I find that myself, I think, wow, it's so much effort getting along with everybody. It's so much work to get along with this one, that one, this one, that one. And sometimes I feel I'm not, why bother? It's not worth it. You know, it's kind of like the amount of effort I make and the, you know, the satisfaction I expect. Now, I'm just going to focus on my health, try to be healthy, and, you know, keep to myself and just be peaceful. You know, I'm not going to, why bother with all this effort to get along with this one, get along with that one? But, you know, the thing is, it doesn't work. That's my experience. It doesn't work. I'll give you an example of that. Yesterday, we're coming home from this conference or convention or whatever you call it. So we were on the airplane, and I kind of decided, okay, you know, I have, it's hard for me to, on a plane or car or something like that, to read. I have a tip to, but so I thought, okay, this is going to be my program. I'm going to I'll look out the window and, you know, look at the scenery, or I'll look at the flight tracker and see, you know, where we are, and I'll just think about different things about Krishna consciousness, and that's how I'll pass this flight, 2.5 hour flight. So, you know, I was really determined not to kind of watch, get absorbed in the rubbish or, you know, the mundane stuff that is kind of all around. And I failed, you know, as I, you know, be honest with you, as I always do when I attempt that. And Jagat Trotha, he also failed. I asked him, because I confided in him afterwards, you know. Yeah, there's a lady sitting next to me. On either side, I had, you know, people. And the lady sitting next to me had on her screen, you know, you have those little TV screens every in front of your chair. She had some movie on, and I was really trying to not watch it, and I couldn't do it. I just, you know, I was looking at my, you know, this flight track. I was looking out the window, but I just kept getting drawn over to it, and, you know, I felt bad, but, you know, just. Afterwards, when I thought about it, I go, well, that's the philosophy, you know. We're people, you know. You know, people want to be. They want Ras, you know. That's why souls don't stay in the Brahma Jyoti, because there's no relationship. There's no loving relationship in the Brahma Jyoti. I mean, it's probably peaceful as all. I was going to say hell, but that it's peaceful as all heaven. You know, it's peaceful. They're experiencing eternity. No, you know, pangs of. Adiatma, Adibhota, Adidaivik, nothing like that, but they don't want to stay there. You know, the souls leave the Brahma Jyoti, and if they come back to the material world in search of that Ras, that, you know, the loving relationship. So that was my experience. And to add insult to injury, Maya just really, after the movie was over, there was some stupid, phony wrestling thing on there, and I even couldn't not watch that. It was like oh my God. So it's really powerful. You know, we really have to, you know, get that positive relationship. You know, the philosophy supports that. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, Natu eva hum jatu nasam, natvam name ajanadipa, nachaiva na bhavishyama, sarve vayam atakpadam. He says, never was there a time that I did not exist, nor you, nor in the future, so any of us cease to be. So Prabhupada in the purport explains, we're eternally persons. We're eternally persons. So persons want loving relationships. And, you know, if you don't have that, if you're thinking like, well, you know, it's too much trouble. Yeah, it is. In the material world, it is a lot of trouble, and the relationships are dissatisfying, and that's why people have a tendency to, you know, be impersonal like that. But it's like a pendulum, you know? That doesn't work. You know, trying to find the loving relationships in the material world, that doesn't work. Mundane material relationships don't satisfy. But negation of that, you know, just kind of like becoming impersonal, that also doesn't work. That doesn't satisfy either. So what do you got to do? We have to learn where to repose our loving propensity so that we can actually become happy and satisfied. And in Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada explains clearly how to do that. Okay, this is from the preface of the Nectar of Devotion. Prabhupada says, the basic principle of the living condition is that we have a general propensity to love someone. No one can live without loving someone else. This propensity is present in every living being. Even an animal, like a tiger, has this loving propensity, at least in a dormant stage. And it is certainly present in the human beings. The missing point, however, is where to repose our love so that everyone can become happy. At the present moment, the human society teaches one to love his country or family or his personal self. But there is no information where to repose the loving propensity so that everyone can become happy. Until now, until Prabhupada came with the Nectar Devotion. Prabhupada says, that missing point is Krishna. And the Nectar Devotion teaches us how to stimulate our original love for Krishna and how to be situated in that position where we can enjoy our blissful life. So that's the solution to the whole problem, you know, to engage in devotional service and, as Prabhupada says here, stimulate our original love for Krishna by doing that. And then we will be completely satisfied. That's why one of the reasons why it's important to come to the temple. And I'll wrap it up and see if there's anybody had any question. Because what are people trying to do when they come to it? What are devotees trying to do when they're coming to the temple? You know, all the functions, we're trying to repose our loving propensity in Krishna. You know, we're coming to chant before Krishna. We're coming to dress Krishna. We're coming to feed Krishna. We're coming to study about Krishna. The underlying principle, you know, to all those activities is we're trying to repose our loving propensity in Krishna. So it's, you know, there's a cumulative effect. Just like his crude analogy, Prabhupada used to use that expression. Imagine you have some music that you like, and you're at home, and you're just listening to it on your, I was going to say record player, but that's long gone, on your phone or whatever, you know. You're enjoying it. But if you go to the concert where that band is, that people are, you know, is playing live, and there's thousands of other people there who are in, you know, playing that, like that same music, it enhances your ability to appreciate and enjoy that music many, many times than just when you're at home listening to it on your own like that. So it's the same way. When you come to the temple, you know, I'm trying to repose my loving propensity in Krishna. You're trying to propose your loving propensity in Krishna. He's trying to, she's trying to, like that. And you get the benefit, you know, it's like a cumulative effect. Everybody, and you feel it. I'll give you an example of that. We just experienced it about a half hour ago. At least I felt like that was what I was experiencing when we're chanting the Dhammadharastika prayers. Even if somebody were to walk in just right off the street who didn't know nothing about Krishna consciousness, didn't know nothing about nothing, they would be able to feel like, whoa, something's going on here. You could feel it. It's like it was a very strong mood of like love and devotion that was created by that, you know, all the devotees chanting together that devotional song to Krishna. You know, you could feel it. So, you know, that's why it's very important to come to the temple and participate in all the different programs, because it, what's the word? What? It develops. It, you know, the more the merrier. Put it, it's very simple. You know, the more devotees come, the more devotees get into it. It creates that a stronger and more powerful atmosphere of that, you know, bhakti, and we all benefit from it. So it's very important. And one, and this is the last point I'll make. And I was making some phone calls, you know, when I was in San Antonio, seeing if other devotees might be interested in getting some books. And so somebody I rang up was a devotee named Amarnath, and some of the older devotees here might remember him. Amarnath, he was somebody, one of the devotees, yeah, Ramanuja, he was one of the devotees that Shastrakrit made, you know, he made a bunch of them. So, you know, we were talking, he was very happy to hear from me, and he just kept repeating, without me, any, you know, instigation on my part, a few times, he kept repeating, you know, those years I spent in New Dwarka, they were the best. That was such a wow. That, you know, the mood there was so nice. The atmosphere was so nice. He, you know, he was so appreciative. And he said it, and then he said it again. And then I, you know, changed the subject, and then he came back, and he said, so I said, wow, you know, it's really, you know, we have to try to appreciate what we got here, you know. At least he was. So it's very important. If it's, you know, as Prabhupada's saying here, we have to try to stimulate our original love for Krishna and you know, be situated in that position to enjoy a blissful life. And actually, the program for doing that is exactly what we have, you know, is here. So we really just have to remind ourselves of that and plug into it. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any question? Such an annoying.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you. In the purport, it is mentioned in the verse that glorifying the devotees like Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, and many other devotees is the same as glorifying Krishna. So it's a well taken point. You know, we all agree with that. So I have a question. It's an reflection and question. So sometimes we see that, because you were mentioned that creates harmony when everybody's, you know, the glorification and
by quit the atmosphere, yeah.
So, but I have a reflection in that point. We know in the history of, you know, a prominent religious group made his guru Krishna so much glorification that sometimes some fanaticals, or maybe they misunderstood, they say, no, actually, he's not the Son of God, he's God himself. In a similar way, in our movement, in the beginning of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, there were a few devotees, and were, you know, all of you, the older devotees, they're familiar. They were saying, Prabhupada is God, right? So, and it goes on to even at the present time, sometimes, you know, devotees, maybe naive or not very mature, they can actually say, oh, you know, glorify their present teacher in the same level as Prabhupada, or maybe overcome, and we had some difficulties in that too. So my question will be, what will be the safest way to actually do the correct thing and not to get a disturbance? Because that tendency in every group is there. Or just like children when they're playing around. My father is bigger than your father. You know, actually, my father, he jumps so high. Well, my father, he can fly. So, any reference that you can give from Shastra?
Your question / reflection is not hypothetical. It's something that actually has been experienced within ISKCON and has been dealt with. And the GBC has come out with at least one paper, you know, explaining the preeminent position of Srila Prabhupada within ISKCON forever. You know, Samstapak Acharya, Founder Acharya, and his books are meant to be read by everybody. You know, so the GBC has given guidelines. So I would say the way to avoid that pitfall is education. You know, devotees need to be educated. As I said, this is something that's happened already, and it was, you know, addressed by the GBC, and they discussed it and came out with a paper. So devotees should read that or be educated as to what they had to say. Right? Am I right, Archita? Yeah. That's what I would say about that. It's not something new. It's not something hypothetical. It's for real. It happened. And the GBC has responded to it. So we should take advantage of how they responded to it and, you know, study what they gave us. Study what they had to say on the subject. You know, of that particular point. Is that a good answer? Yeah. Anybody else? Anything? Prema?
I think I read it. Then Srila Prabhupada said that he wanted that his disciples should be also very, very advanced. Like him, you know, even more advanced. I read it somewhere in some letter anyway. I think I read it like that. So my question is it possible for some of disciple or grand disciple of Srila Prabhupada to be very, very much advanced like Srila Prabhupada?
What was the last thing you said?
I didn't hear you. Can I repeat?
Is it possible for a disciple of Srila Prabhupada to become very, very much advanced like Srila Prabhupada? I think it's possible for a disciple of Srila Prabhupada to become very, very advanced. I personally, and this is like right off the top of my head, don't think it's possible for somebody to become as advanced as Prabhupada. But I think it's possible for his Prabhupada's disciples to become very, very advanced. And but, I mean, I don't think...
He would never say that.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it was, that's Prabhupada's humility as well, to, you know, to say that I want my disciples to become advanced.
He will never say that.
Oh, there is another thing.
Yeah, Archita, go ahead, help us out.
Hare Krishna. Pure is pure. If you get gold from Africa, that's 100% pure. You get it from Russia or America, 100% pure is 100% pure. It's not that there's 101% or 150%. 100% is 100%. So Prabhupada said that. There's purity. There's those who came from the spiritual world were never contaminated by matter. There are those who by sadhana come back to that pure platform. And then there's those by kripa who come back to that pure platform. But pure is pure. But at the same time, we don't. Prabhupada never presented himself as that. Well, my spiritual master is a pure devotee. I'm a pure devotee. Therefore, we're equal. He never said that. But ontologically, yes, they are equal. Because pure is pure. What drives us forward, or what should drive us forward, is that we are all pure by nature. And we're covered by this material energy since time immemorial. But if we follow this process given by this pure spiritual master, then we can come back to that level of purity. But at the same time, due to the humility, natural humility of a pure soul, they never think themselves to be equal to their spiritual master, what to speak of being equal to God, which the Mayavadis do. You know, I'll come to the point by following my guru where I become God.
Yeah.
You know, we never think like that.
You know, I agree with everything you said, but one second. But I am remembering, I've heard Prabhupada talk about degrees of pure devotion. Like we talk about, you know, this Hanuman. In that book, we had Bhagavatamrita. No, so who's Gopa Kumara is going, who's trying to find the most fortunate, and elsewhere. I've heard Prabhupada say there are, you know, like the gopis at the top, and, you know, below the gopis there was Uddhava, and below Uddhava there's this one. So that even within pure devotional service, there's a hierarchy that's there too. Amala Bhakti Maharaj? Thank you.
I just wanted to mention this part about purity and perfection. I've met fairly new devotees who've been here 3 months, and they complain to me that I'm not a pure devotee now. I said, well, what would it take for you to think that you were a pure devotee? He said, if somebody insulted me or somebody looked down at me, I wouldn't be upset. I wouldn't be disturbed. I wouldn't be shaken. I would just take it. And just as if nothing happened to me. Because sometimes Prabhupada would be, persons would hurl insults at him, but he would be unaffected and just deal with the point and not deal with the insult. So I said to him, first of all, you have to be patient. Patient for what? Patient for when Krishna is going to decide to make you purer and purer and purer. He decides. You don't decide just because you set up an idea in your mind that after 3 weeks or 4 weeks, I should be a pure devotee and be unaffected, undisturbed, unshaken by anything. No, it doesn't work that way. The way it works is that Krishna is the ultimate arbiter of your fate. But we also must make the effort and offer the prayers to Krishna to please help me to become better than what I am. I'm trying, but obviously, maybe I'm not trying hard enough. So the answer that I usually got from myself when I had that problem is that you're not surrendered enough. You see, and what do you mean by not surrendered enough? I'm here, I come to the temple, I come to the program. More than that, you have to give up everything that you have. Your hands belong to me, Krishna says. Your eyes belong to me. Your lips belong to me. Your voice belongs to me. Your ideas belong to me. Everything about you belongs to me. But do you have that feeling that you belong to me? No, you still belong to yourself and you still have your big false ego. So when you forget this ego thing, I did this, I did this, I should get this, I should get that. It's actually 4 weeks already and I'm not pure. No, leave it to Krishna. That's called surrender. Surrender means this body, this mind, this intelligence, everything that you call, I call myself, belongs to you, Lord. And you play on it like an instrumentalist plays on a piano. And he gets better and better. The sound gets clearer and clearer. And the sound becomes more and more beautiful. So similarly, we have to have that patience. And the patience is that let Krishna, and we simply accept what we receive from Krishna, and glad that we get even one little pinch from him, and not so thinking that I'm so great, I'm so wonderful, I'm so glorious, I should get much more. No, whatever Krishna gives me, that's fine. The very fact that I can come to a class like yours is amazing. How many people are coming to this class? So I have the, like you mentioned, the means, the method of how to become pure. Simply surrender my body, my mind, my intelligence, everything that I call me to the Lord, and let him work on it like a pianist plays the piano.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
The sale is registered on the credit card. So you can run the credit card.